Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer. It's not just Friday, it's Follow-Up Friday. And yesterday we spoke with Kate Bricolet, staff reporter for the Brooklyn Paper, about the 13 sexual attacks in Brooklyn, including one rape starting in March. We took calls from women to see if they've changed their behavior at all and how they're defending themselves against the attacks. And then the reporter herself talked about using keys for self-defense.
Now when I walk down the street, I always hold my keys in my hand with, you know, one of the keys sticking out in case I have to, you know, defend myself against these sort of things. But
what's it, for people who don't know, what's the key drill? You're supposed to, like, scratch his face or something?
I guess.
Yeah. That you're always told, oh, yeah, and put the keys between your knuckles. But then what? They don't really get into too much detail. So let's get into a little more detail this morning with Tracy Hobson, executive director of the Center for Anti-Violence Education, located in Park Slope. Welcome to WNYC, Tracy.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's great to be on the air.
I am going to guess that your organization has been, what, is it too strong to say, besieged with requests for advice since these attacks have started?
Yes, we've had a 126% increase in our program since these attacks have been more public. It's true.
What is your program?
We provide violence prevention, self-defense, martial arts, and empowerment programs for communities especially at risk of violence.
Which means who?
Well, in this particular case, we're providing a lot of additional programming for women because right now there's a greater fear for women in the area when they're walking home at night.
And it's a nonprofit. You do this at cost. How much does it cost to get this training?
Right now, these programs are offered free thanks to city council members and others. We offer everything on a sliding fee scale based on income, and then it's free for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault, as well as for teens.
So I'll get into, if I go to a program, what will I hear? But on this issue that we were just hearing about, keys, what is the technique in using your keys, if you subscribe to that technique at all?
Well, using keys is one of many techniques, and if they are used, it's best to use it towards a primary target, like the eyes, the nose, the throat. Or I would say the eyes and the throat. Otherwise, it's better to use something like your elbow, for example, to if someone's coming behind you, or the back of your heel. Keys can be helpful, and it can make people feel a lot safer, and it can be used in certain situations, but it's when someone's up close and only to those vital targets.
Yeah. Any suggestion that attackers who see women just holding the keys like that would not attack?
You know, it's hard to know what will make an attacker attack or not, but I would say that there are different things that we can do that might help someone want to avoid us. We can be really aware of how we present ourselves. Are we looking up? Are we looking around? Are we aware? Are we alert? Are we ready to run if we need to? We can send certain messages that can sometimes help us.
We can take a couple calls. We'll get into that in a second, but I just want to give out our number in case anyone has specific questions. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You could send in questions on our website at WNYC.org. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show. So you talk about being aware and alert. Mobile phones, do they cut both ways? I would imagine they do. They either can signal that I'm connected to the outside world, or they can signal I'm not paying attention. Do you have a blanket rule on mobile phones?
We don't have a blanket rule on mobile phones. It's what you feel safest doing in the moment. I, for instance, when I've been walking down a busy street, when there's many people around me, but I feel like I'm getting a lot of looks or maybe someone's following me right in the moment and saying some lewd remarks, I might stay on my phone or pretend like I'm on my phone so I don't have to look anyone in the eye, for example. But if I'm on an empty street, that's not the time to be talking on one's phone or having earphones in.
Let's take a call. Up first will be Anne in Manhattan. You're on WNYC, and good morning, Anne.
Good morning. I'd like to paraphrase what Kathy Bates said in the movie Dolores Claiborne. Sometimes being a, quote, B, is all women's got left. And my defensive tactic since I moved into the East Village in the early 80s when it was rather dangerous was to always be hands free. I wear a backpack and a waist bag. I have the waist bag on my side so I don't get hot crotched, and it hides one's pot belly. And you have your hands free instead of holding all this luggage women carry around. And I think that's a good thing for a lot of women to try out.
What do you think, Tracy?
I personally...
Hands free.
I personally actually prefer to walk with my hands free. And there's no one way to handle different situations. We do recommend that people have their keys ready to use when they get to their door, so they're not fumbling for their keys in the doorway. You can have it right in your pocket, or you can hold it in your hands. But I do prefer my hands to be free because I know that there are techniques that I can use. Maybe I'll throw the keys if I want to make a distraction. But we do talk to people about different things that they can do to make themselves more able to get away in a situation. A bag, you don't want it to hamper you, but also can be used to throw at somebody. So there are a whole range of options. You can hit someone with it. There are a whole range of options that you can do with the things right on you, garbage, change, your own hands. It varies.
Thanks for the call, Anne. And I would just imagine that just having this in your head, the kind of person who strategizes about self-defense and whatever technique you have, that's probably more than half the battle, right?
Absolutely. Our self-confidence can really help us in a situation. And also the ability to yell and use our voice. It's something that's not often expected. And when we can throw the attacker off guard in any way, it might give us an extra few seconds that can really be helpful in getting away.
I heard once that you shouldn't yell rape, you should yell fire. Is this something that you've ever heard?
Yes, we do say that sometimes yelling fire can bring more attention. Unfortunately, people don't always run to the scene when they're hearing help or rape.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you what classes that you give, what's the curriculum like. But you know what? We have a call from Yehudit. Am I getting your name right?
Yes,
and so you've taken one of these classes?
Yes, I have.
Tell me about it.
I want to say that they're, not just in this crisis, really important for everyone to know self-defense skills, which they emphasize and give. And shouting, my God, even when I took the class, longtime feminist, my shout started out like, ah! And, you know, for a lot of women, you have to practice having that deep voice that will be effective. Hopefully. You're not responsible. No woman's responsible for a rapist who goes after her, no matter what she's wearing and what she's saying. But for these, fortunately, some of these guys have gotten scared off from yelling. And I also want to say that, and you run away is important if you can. Get away, get away. Question. I live in Kensington, and until I heard it on NYC, and now I've looked on the blogs, I had not heard about this. And you know, there aren't signs up in my neighborhood and my part of the neighborhood, and I want to thank NYC and hear if you know what else is being done. You know, I heard the piece yesterday about the Brooklyn paper to publicize this more.
All right.
You know, in other words, in Park Slope I've seen signs, but not in this end.
Have you seen this? And thank you for the call and sharing your experience there. Tracy, have you seen these attackers be well publicized, especially in recent days?
Well, I know that there are different community groups getting the word out in different ways. I have seen some emails that have gone out in the Kensington area. I don't know if there's the same amount of flyering that's happening there. But I do know that, for instance, Councilmember Brad Lander has been doing work trying to get the word out. There's been a task force formed with the DA's office. There's a group called Safe Slope that's doing work.
And here in Kensington, there's a group called Karma that's organized bike patrols to meet people at the bus stop, at the train, and also walking people.
All right. Thanks for that information,
you.
Karma. I wanted to ask you, you made a reference to I don't know if you used the words what to wear, but how to comport yourself. And, you know, part of the attacks, it's been reported that the MO of the attackers is to put their hands under women's skirts. So this gets to the situation where perhaps you would want to warn against wearing a skirt, but that can be dicey, not only in a blame the victim sense, but this is not something that our police necessarily need to explicitly be warning women against. NYPD Deputy Commissioner Paul Brown is the spokesman for the police. When asked, are police officers telling women not to wear short skirts? He said, officers are not telling women what not to wear. There's a TV series that does that. They're simply pointing out that as part of this pattern involving one or more men, that the assailants have targeted women wearing skirts. So what do you think of the overall message, Tracy?
Well, I think, like you said, it's never, ever the fault of the person being attacked, no matter what they're wearing, what they're saying. And when people share this kind of information about the skirts, it can bring up that age-old resentment that women are having because we're constantly told it's our fault, right? If we'd just done this stuff differently, then this wouldn't have happened. So we have to be really careful when we talk about this. And I've spoken to different people who do want to have the information. But I think it's very, if you're going to pass them that information, it's very important to put that in with a lot of other information about what's going on, resources that are there, and not just the piece about the skirt. I think a lot of this came because initially some of these conversations were a little bit blaming. Do you see what you're wearing there?
Yeah.
It's showing a lot of skin. I mean, there's a way to present information and a whole range of information. This is happening late at night in these areas. These are places where you can get someone to walk you home. These are places where you can get self-defense courses. These are some of the things it seems that the attacker's looking for, just so you're aware. There's a way to present things that can be helpful to people.
Yeah. It's not, you know, the forewarned is forearmed. I don't know how much hemlines come into play. We're speaking with Tracy Hobson, Executive Director of the Center for Anti-Violence Education. Bob from Rego Park. Go right ahead, Bob. You're on the air.
Great show. I'd like to ask a question. You know, there's a little subtlety here. Let's say, for example, a guy grabs a girl's behind. She's has a key available. She quickly, because she's been trained to use the key, uses the key on the guy. He grabs a knife, kills her with a knife in the neck. So there has to be a certain restraint, not just to quickly use this key, because you'll get yourself killed.
All right, well, and you know what? That speaks to what's probably an age-old question in what you do, which is it always right, the best strategy to fight back? Any advice on that in general, Tracy?
I think the most important thing to do is to listen to your gut. And we really support people doing whatever it is that they can do to be as safe as possible in the moment. We also really recommend getting away. When we talk about striking out, it's in order to be able to run away. So there's ways to try to de-escalate a situation rather than escalate a situation, which we talk about a lot in our programming. But trusting your gut is really important in those situations.
Right. And someone also has written in and asked, what about a pocket knife or something like that for protection?
You know, when we're talking about weapons, it's really important to know how to use them if you're going to use them. Most attacks don't involve a weapon. But when we're talking about us carrying one, I know sometimes people say, I just carry a knife. And have you practiced using that knife? Do you know how to use that knife? Do you know what target you would go towards? What would you do if that knife were taken from you and used against you? So if you choose to do that, if that makes you feel more comfortable to do, make sure that you really know what you're doing with that. And a license to carry it, for example,
yeah,
depending on what it is.
It's like if you talk to military people, they'll assess the situation, even police, and they'll assess the situation because they want to avoid danger. They'll notice choke points. They'll notice escape routes. They'll notice all that before they talk about, you know, how can I use violence to escape the situation?
Right.
Blanche commented online, what really helped me was pretending that I was an attacker. I'd scan the streets for someone to attack and would plan how I might do it. It taught me lots. Walk fast with a purpose. Don't have anything he could grab. The usual stuff you hear, but it's a lot different from hearing the tips. That seems like a good technique. What do you think, Tracy?
So you're saying, say that again. I didn't quite understand. You're saying just to be aware in the before.
Blanche said she went through the streets and played a little mind game with herself that said, well, if I was an attacker, what would I look for and who would I attack? And that made her realize which people seemed vulnerable and which places seemed dangerous.
That's an excellent idea. So it's one way to just make yourself more aware. And any way that we can do that, we promote that. Talking to one another, talking to other neighbors, keeping your eyes open, taking self-defense, anything you can do to educate yourself and make yourself feel more confident and have more options is highly recommended.
You know, I have also heard, I can't quite place it, but this idea that historically women were once told not to fight back and now they are. Is that accurate historically? Has the kind of thinking on fending off an attack changed?
It has, and that's because a situation is already dangerous. There are a whole different range of things that you can do, and like I said, you can trust your gut. But 51% of people, over 50% of people, have been able to get away from somebody when they fight back. And I think those numbers have even changed in the more recent years. Sometimes they're not expecting you to do something. And when we can do anything to throw them off their guard, a yell makes a huge difference, a kick, one strike to a vulnerable area and then running away. People are not expecting that all the time. And that can be really helpful.
Sue from Brooklyn, I think we take one last call. And Sue, I want it to be yours. Go ahead. You're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi. I took a self-defense class like 30 years ago, and we learned all of the techniques, and I think it's a great show. And you know, but one of the things that they talked about was the psychological aspect, which I wasn't aware of even then as a young feminist, which was women's tendency to be protective rather than aggressive. So, you know, if you hurt somebody, you tend to withdraw. Like, you punch somebody and they're like, oh my God, I'm sorry I hurt you. But if somebody's attacking you and you stick a key in their eye or kick them in the groin and they double over, you need to, like, keep doing that until you can get away and not back off. So I think women should think about being, you know, go against their nature of being sort of protective, or what we've learned to be protective, and be aggressive.
Tracy, do you find that in your programs?
Absolutely. A big part of what we're doing is actually learning physical techniques so that people can feel stronger in the sense of, hey, I can do this. And if I were faced with a situation, I could do it until I need to get away. It's not something that we're taught. And so when we practice it, when we practice yelling, when we practice different situations that might come about and how to get away, it does help us build up these skills to go against what's often been taught not to do.
Sue, I want to thank you for the call. And Tracy Hobson, I want to thank you. Tracy Hobson, Executive Director of the Center for Anti-Violence Education. Thanks for that, Tracy.
Thank you, Mike.
You got a website that you want to give out?
Yes, caeny.org.
And that's on our homepage, too. All right, thanks again. Coming up next, with Comic-Con in town, Jeff Yang looks at the way the comics and presidential politics are interacting. It's in a moment. Stay with us on WNYC.